Accession number 19895, Reel 2.
Captain Phillips, Reel 2.
At Wrexham, on the borders of Wales. of course, we were wearing our green berets and were full of the joys of spring. And as we came into the stations, I remember people giving us tremendous ovations because we were commandos, and the papers were full of commandos advancing in France and bypassing opposition and the wonderful things that they had done, and we were getting the credit for it, which was all rather nice. But we got to Wrexham, and I went to a holding company, where strangely enough, the company commander was a Captain Hoare, who had been the troop commander of X Troop in 48 Commando, and had been wounded, I think, either on D-Day or the day after. I was there for a week or a fortnight, maybe 3 weeks. Then joined a draft to go across to Normandy. Went down to Warsash into the concentration area, and spent a few days there, and then went across to Arromanches on a cross-channel ferry. Disembarked there, then went to a series of transit camps with the draft en route to 4 Commando Brigade. We eventually joined up with brigade headquarters in a chalk quarry behind the lines on the the left-hand flank of the bridgehead, at a place the bridgehead went through a place called Salonel, and I'm not sure where the brigade headquarters was, but it lay behind there. We spent about a week there before we were allocated to our different commandos, and coincidentally I found myself allocated to X Troop for 48 Commando. The troop commander was a chap by the name of Mackenzie, and I only ever knew him as Mac. I didn't learn his Christian name until quite recently. But he was coincidentally an ex-police cadet from Leicester. He was about 5 years older than I was. A very phlegmatic, laid-back chap who had won the Military Cross on D-Day. And we got on extremely well. The commando was only about a third strength then, after its casualties and whatever of D-Day. It was about 300 strong, possibly a bit less. I found myself as a really very new second lieutenant, age 19, the second in command of X Troop of 48 Commando. I was only the second in command because there wasn't any more senior officer to fill that post. So there I was with Mac in Salonel. Salonel was literally the left-hand flank of the bridgehead, and we were in slit trenches up on the I was going to say hills, but it was sort of rolling countryside, overlooking the Wistrom and the river Steve, I think. And the time that we spent there was involved. It was a purely a defensive position, but it was an aggressive defensive position because the commando was sending out patrols every night out into the countryside between Salonelle and Wistrom, keeping the Germans in their place, as it were. Nothing really outstanding occurred while I was there. The most warlike thing that I saw were the planes coming over to bomb Kong. And some of the enormous collections of aircraft, the 1,000 bomber raids that came across, were just absolutely incredible. But I was really learning in that period how to be an officer in an active service unit. It was a little different from what I had been trained for, obviously, because the it was a very much more relaxed atmosphere, but a highly disciplined atmosphere as well.
What were the main lessons that you learned from being in action for the first time?
Well, I didn't actually go into action until a couple of weeks later. I mean, the most I did was to lay in a hedge and listen at Salonelle. But when shortly before the breakout, about a fortnight before the breakout, we moved up to Choan, where we took up positions in one hedgerow and the Germans were in the next hedgerow. It was as close as that. A couple of patrols there, and obviously mortaring and that sort of thing, it all seemed almost as though I was reading a book. I was interested in it. I don't ever remember at that stage being scared when you heard the mortars coming and so on. It seemed almost like a film. When the breakout occurred, of course, then we started to move forward through France, and one began to the first time I actually went into action as such was in a was near a point 170 near was it 140 near Troarn. And the commander was moving forward. We moved out actually at dawn up over the hill, and when we got on top of the hill, the leading troop disturbed some German artillery who quickly they had horse-drawn artillery, but they quickly harnessed up and drove away. But the troop came under fire from what was thought to be an armoured car further down in the valley, and so X troop was sent off to deal with this. And we went, it was a Sunday morning, we went off down into the valley with Mac and I leading. And the troop, obviously, in the battle formation behind us, in these sunken roads, with the almost nil visibility because they were sunken, the high banks and the hedges. To see anything, you had to climb the bank and look through the hedges. We came down into a little town called Clermont-en-Auge. And I have such a clear recollection of our entry into this village as we came into it in our advanced contact formation. The church bell was ringing, And the villagers were going to church, and we came to a crossroads with white ranch fencing. The villagers were so thrilled to see us. We were British and we were liberating them and so on. Albeit that we were in fact in advance of the British line and behind the German lines. We got into the village and established a perimeter around the crossroads and this white ranch fencing. And Max said, well, we better consolidate here, take a section and do a sweep round the front and see what you can disturb and report back. So I took the section and we started to do a sweep around the front about 200 or 300 yards in front of around the village. And we were going through orchards with observation towers in them, which were unmanned. But obviously the Germans have erected them so that they could get a view over this very close country. And the first thing that happened was that we, after about half an hour, we came to a sunken road, and there was a German officer and a soldier with a motorcycle, and we ambushed them, and then we went on round, and came to another sunken road. Obviously, all of these were coming down into Clermont, and we looked through the hedge, and there was a party of six or eight. They looked like SS troopers because they were in black and jack boots and so on, and they were pushing a pram with the road signs, which obviously they'd been collecting. And so we ambushed those, and then we moved on round. We came under fire from a Spando, and we broke off contact there and returned back to the troop, being able to say that the Germans were obviously withdrawing through this area, and that we had made contact. In the interim, a German, it was an airborne jeep in fact, but it was driven by Germans. They'd obviously captured it earlier on. Had they driven into our position in Clermont and had been captured by the troop there. So we had quite a busy little day. And during this period, we were out of wireless contact because we were down in the valley. Having collected all this information and prisoners as well, I think a runner arrived. Because we had to get back to commander headquarters at a place called Annabold, a big farm, to join up with the commando for the next stage of the advance. And I always remember the objection that the German prisoners took to speed marching from where we were to Annabelle. They didn't think that was funny at all, and I suppose it probably wasn't, but we had to get there quickly. Then we carried on with the pursuit up through Pont l'Evêque. There was all of the time, we were then with, of course, with 6th Airborne Division, part of, we were attached to 6th Airborne Division. And the object of the exercise was to try to catch up with and get ahead of the retreating Germans. This entailed leapfrogging forward on what little transport that we had. Short engagements, sort of short, sharp engagements, I suppose, with retreating German units. I always remember one particular little engagement in on, again, it was near the top of a hill, but in a farm. And we were moving through these close fields, these farm fields, behind the hedges, and nipping across the gaps in the approved form. And at one stage, we were waiting to move, and machine gun fire was coming through the hedgerows above our heads, and so everybody obviously had their heads down. And through the field came the farmer and his wife, just walking along, and they had a couple of bottles and some glasses of Calvados. And to our soldiery laying down behind the hedges, they poured out glasses of Calvados and handed them to them with the bullets flying about. It was absolutely incredible. It was unreal. And then there was an attempt to get through the German lines and get ahead of retreating Germans. There was the night march, which the brigade, in fact, did to a place called Bursville, and that was really such an incredible experience, because the troop commanders in X Troop had to memorize sections of the route. The night was as black as pitch, and we spent the night sort of stumbling forward and bumping into the chaps in front, and people going to sleep and being woken up, and you know, we all got there to Bursville the following morning to find that the Germans had left about half an hour before, which was a bit of a letdown, but that was the pursuit. You were making all this effort to get ahead and sort of making contact and breaking contact. We had very little transport because there was no provision of transport in the commando equipment, just a few jeeps, and that was all. It got better after we had been there for some time, but at that time we were marching all the time. Occasionally a troop of troop carrying vehicles would come along, we get a lift forward, but generally speaking, we moved most of the way up through France on our feet. We got and then eventually, of course, we got to the Seine, and that was an incredible experience, because we had heard how the retreating Germans had got to the Seine, and of course that was a barrier that they had to get over, and there was very little transport across the Seine. And of course, in the while they were caught on the Seine, the Air Force came over and they just bombed them to pieces for, I don't know what distance it was, a couple of miles or so before you got to the Seine. We went through, and we were on transport then, I think. Yes, we were. We went through fields, with fields either side, full of vehicles and dead horses and dead men, littered with equipment. It was, the smell was sickly. It was it must have been a terrible experience for the people involved, because they'd obviously been strafed and strafed and strafed, and they had nowhere to go. We went, we crossed the Seine on assault craft, collapsible assault craft. And from there on, the whole tone of the pursuit altered, because we were just almost running to try to catch up with the Germans. We were sending out patrols in a section on say three jeeps out into the countryside ahead of us, trying to make contact, and we never did. We never did make contact as such. We picked up a lot of German prisoners, but all we did was to liberate villages and little towns. I think, as the chronicler of 4-8 said, the biggest danger during that period was to go into a village in a jeep and receive a bunch of flowers in the face. but there was no fighting per se. We were just trying to catch up all the time. Odd, amusing things. We got to a little place. I think it was called Yvetot. We were stopped. You stop where you are. You stay. Don't move forward. We had, of course, had patrols out, and in fact, on that particular day, I from X Troop, I'd taken out a patrol, three jeep loads of lads, and the drill with that was that you went out in your jeeps, and as soon as you approached a village or a little town, you got out of the jeeps and went into advanced to contact formation until you got in there and found that it was undefended, and then called the jeeps in and so on. And almost invariably, there was a liberation ceremony in the square where the mayor thanked you for what you'd done and so on, and the crowd of people who were delighted to see you. And then it was a question of finding whether there were any Germans in the area, and if there were, picking them up and so on. And I remember on that particular day, we discovered that there was a couple of Germans in a barn. One of the people in the town told us that they were there, and we went to collect them. One of them was wounded, and the French people who'd been looking after them begged us not to shoot them, and it was terribly difficult to convince them that we weren't going to take them round the corner and shoot them. They just put on the chap who was wounded on a stretcher on the jeep and the others into the jeeps, and of course we went on. But in that patrol, we in fact went into the outskirts of Fécamp, which is next door to St. Valery on Coole. And in Fécamp, you probably know, it's the place where they make Benedictine. And it was there that I learnt of the local drink, which was cognac and Benedictine moitié. Very nice it was too. But we got back to the unit on that particular day to find that the advance had been stopped, and that the reason for that emerged that evening when the 51st Highland Division came tearing through to liberate St. Valery and Fécamp. Little did they know that a few jeep loads of commandos had been there before them. The From there, we the commando went on to Le Havre and took over. I say took over. We were put. It was a policing role, really, of all the supplies that were in these all the tunnels and so on in the cliffs of Le Havre. The I think it was the 49th West Riding had taken the town, but we had to come in and act as sentries on all these supplies because, of course, the French were badly wanted them, and it would have been, I imagine, absolute chaos if they'd been allowed to just have their way. We did that for about a week, and then we were pulled out. We had several days at a place called Valmont, where it was a complete rest and relaxation period. We were in billets in the town, and the French looked after us wonderfully. And then we went to Dunkirk, where we took over from a Canadian recce regiment. The Canadian recce regiment had been keeping the perimeter of Dunkirk, keeping the Germans in Dunkirk, but not attacking. Our job was to take over from the regiment. We were of course a much smaller unit, and we didn't have armored cars, but to try to give the impression that the Canadians were still there. We, the forward troops, and in their patrols and jeeps, turned their berets inside out, so they were black instead of green berets. And we were there for a week or a fortnight, and were we spent the time patrolling as the CO said, we will patrol aggressively and push the Germans back into Dunkirk, which is exactly what we did. It was a bit chancy because, of course, the ground is very flat there. There's very little cover. And so the general thing was to patrol forward in the mist in the morning and take up a position in a farmhouse or something, and then shoot up the Germans when it became light or the mist lifted. And then retire under cover of smoke and our own covering mortar fire. And then from Dunkirk, we were pulled out and sent to a place in Belgium called Den Haan. Or Le Coq sur Mer, to train for the landing on Borkum. We had 3 weeks training. Borkum, of course, was is an island and had been flooded, with the dikes having been breached by RAF bombing. And the defences in the dunes around Borkum were practically identical with the ones along the dunes at Den Haan. And that's why Den Haan had been chosen, because we practised and practised and practised making assaults along the top of the dunes.